I thought it would be nice to have a conversation about women in the world, ourselves, and from the context of health, but also prosperity, because I think that it's one of the challenges that I have faced is really reaching a level of prosperity that allows me to do more in my life. So I think that would be a good topic to look at, really, how do we build something and make it work and move out into the world with it, but also to be able to prosper enough to be able to live life well. So I think that's important. And I think as a women's issue, it also relates to families and how women are very often the support in a family structure and are not really flourishing, though the family may be flourishing, the children may be flourishing, but the support structure of the woman in the household or even in the workplace. I've been in many workplaces where I had a lot of responsibility, but I didn't know really how to get respect and to be able to flourish in a way that a man in the workplace would know how to negotiate for themselves. I never really learned those skills. So I think there's a lot of to think about with regard to women in the world at this time. So with that kind of a jump off, so with that juxtaposition of women in health, maybe we can work out a conversation, because most of us, even though we may not all be women in this panel, have mothers and sisters and daughters and friends. So it's a wholesome conversation. And I think often enough, when we're talking about a particular issue, whether it's men's issues or women's issues or somewhere in the middle, transgender issues, it's easy to divide into camps. So my goal is that we don't so easily divide into different camps. And I just want to remind all of our listeners and viewers that this is a We the World health campaign production in combination with Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium, which is heard on WBAI in New York, and the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And I am wanting to do a free form. So if we would each jump in and give a little introduction to yourself, because there's always somebody new listening in. Who would like to start?
Okay, well, I'm Yvette Dubell, and I am the artist researcher coordinating the Campaign for Freedom, or the Freedom Campaign. And a couple of things about what you were just saying, Catherine. And one was sometimes the culture in organizations and businesses is not necessarily one that is supportive of women, as particularly to that point that you mentioned of earning respect and having to navigate that. And so one of the things that I found was who I have to be in that environment to get people to do what they need to do. I didn't especially like that at all. And just in general, I'm working in community development where you sort of need some political support, and looking when you don't, when you aren't coming from a place of necessarily influence or advantage, to get those buy-ins from people who, let's say, have the power, you know, that can get you the funds that you need. And so there's the maneuvering of, I guess let's call it relationship building, but that feels a bit like spinny. That, and you get into that sort of territory. Do you see what I'm saying? Where it's like you're having to walk this fine line of how much crap am I going to put up with to get what I need for my program? Support do I need? And what do I need to do to get it? you know, especially when it's somebody that you don't know from Adam. So there's a whole lot of kind of like walking that line of, I guess in the business world, they you get mentors, right? But getting a champion, you know, getting a champion maybe who's connected. And I remember going to this community development institute, getting the director of that thing on board with the project. And then that became sort of like the way to get introductions to like a regional director for some sort of health systems thing. And you know what I mean? And so getting letters of support from those people, then having to get politicians to fax your letter in, you know, from their office, as opposed to just including it in your proposal. Do you know what I'm saying? Because that can get you out of the trash can. You know what I mean? because suddenly they're like, okay, who is this person again? That, you know, congressman or senator, whoever is submitting her letter of support from his office. So that carries a different kind of weight than just, and that kind of like maneuvering. Do you know what I'm saying? And so it just, you feel like you're playing in this corrupt pool and trying not to get corrupted by it, really. And so I think that there's the whole, like, how do you get people to support, you know, do what you have to do to get that support to make your thing successful. But then there's also the managing people when you're managing men. And I will never forget this guy. And this was a guy who technically was my client who said this to me, but he said it was a pimp and hoe world. And I was like, whoa, what? Right? And I was like, well, I hope we know like who's doing the pimping, because it's not me. You need to go. And he needed to get me a meeting with this president's foundation. So anyway, it was just a whole lot of inappropriate language that resulted in people calling me like a ball buster. And you had to act this sort of like... cut them off at the knees to make them like take you seriously, basically. And that's not how I want to be in the world. That's not how I want to deal with people. Those aren't the kind of relationships that I want. But you end up in this sort of like viper's pit where what do you do to keep people from like sort of coming after you, especially when there's nobody on your side? I just think so. I think that fits into health in terms of the stress and what that does to your mental health. Have to, you know, figure out how to survive and manipulate the pieces and be like 10 steps ahead of whoever, whatever adversaries or whatever that develop. So anyway, so I was thinking like from that perspective, like what women have to do sometimes to be able to thrive in those cultures where, you know, the bigger money games are being played and at what cost, you know? So I think the stress factor is, and it's a sustained stress. It's not, you know, and that's the worst in terms of impact on health, you know, is to be living with that stress where you go to bed thinking about this and you wake up thinking about it. And it's the never ending sort of thing. So I think that figuring out how to create like new avenues and new paths based on a different model. And I forget his name, forgive me, the person on the WE team who's looking at alternative economic models. All of these things are very much, I forget who, right? Jack. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. It's all so connected, like Sharon's work with, you know, coming from a place of love and compassion, and Sue with like, you know, considering the impact on the environment. I mean, all of that is a factor in it if you're trying to thrive economically and to have those sort of considerations. Doesn't necessarily have to raise cost of doing business. It doesn't, but you know what I'm saying? And so, but to be the champion of that, when that is often made the excuse, when you have no support, just as an example. So I think that then what you're talking about, what we all have been talking about, more holistic ways of making those inroads based on collaboration and respect and compassion and wanting everything that we do to be an embodiment of those kinds of values. But it just takes, I guess, like commitment, maybe commitment and a little bit of experience. I don't know. So there's my 2 cents.
Well, that's really interesting, you know, because I've been in those kind of workplaces. I haven't, not in my own business, but in other spaces. And I find that it's very difficult to have a human-centered environment around you when you're not in one that's like that. It almost feels like you have to, I never learned to maneuver that well, but I would move, I would leave a place, I would only stay in a place where I felt in some way that I could have an impact from my vantage point. Who would like to speak up next? We're talking Sharon, yeah. That intersection of women and health.
Yeah, and prosperity. Don't forget to put that in there. That's to me is a big, big foundational key to a woman's confidence in herself and her success. And at this, by the way, I'm Sharon Rhea, and I'm the coordinator of the Unity Campaign for We the World. I'm also the founder of No Judgment, Just Love, and a family relationship coach with the Whole Family Coaching. And I want to resonate with Yvette's comment, because it sounds, which I think is correct, that you were involved in politics as a lobbying a particular client or perspective. Am I correct, Yvette? I don't know the answer to that, what you describe, which is a difficulty in maneuvering and having a champion and being able to be seen and heard as a valuable component of whatever universe you were trying to either crack into or you were already a part of, so that you could be seen as valuable and receive what you needed to receive for yourself and your clients. And I just want to offer a different perspective as we explore the answer for what you presented, which is I was a lobbyist in New York State working with the New York State Legislature. And I had no idea I was going to be a lobbyist in my life. I started out in this law firm as a relief receptionist. And because I'd been there almost, I don't know, 15, 18 years, there was a part of our law firm that was in Albany, which is the capital of New York, that had the speaker, a lot of prominent men in that environment from the place that I worked, where one leader of that firm saw me because I actually stood up as a woman and sort of took responsibility for something, which we don't always do as people. Something happened in our office and, you know, I had to just tell him, hey, I take responsibility for whatever my staff did. I was the communications director at that time. And he then, a couple of days later, invited me to become a lobbyist in New York. And talking about champions, I had about five of them, and they were all men. And they all protected me. They taught me. They respected me. And it was a unique but fluid kind of entree into this world that I had no idea what it was. It wasn't from New York. I had no idea about politics. I didn't know what a bill was, none of that. But what I encountered, Yvette, different from not having a champion, which I had, was I was about 20 years younger and awfully cute. And trying to maneuver as an intelligent but novice lobbyist without the interruption of that by, oh, you're so cute. Can you come out? Do you want, you know, all of the undercurrent innuendos that were coming my way all the time with people I had to lobby, men I had to lobby. And the reason I was there, my boss told me, was the complexion of the legislature was changing. And they needed a Black person and a woman, because more women were being elected to the legislature, to be in the presence to lobby for their clients. So I had to, as far as health goes, kind of figure out, how do I be who I am? I can't help that I'm a cutie pie, but I'm also intelligent. So I need you to see past that, but I'm also learning. So I'm going to ask a lot of questions. So what I found for my health was this challenge of every day waking up, what do I wear? How do I wear it? How do I walk? What do I say? How do I deflect but not push away? And it caused, like you said, a lot of stress. that happened every day, but for a different reason as a woman. I fortunately was compensated well. I had no issue with that. I was supported by the champions in my firm, but trying to effectively do my job as a young Black woman, who, by the way, was one of only two Black women lobbyists in Albany at the time. So there were a whole lot of doors opening and that I had to walk through with not really awareness that I was a pioneer, but just in my own person, I had to figure out how is the best way I'm going to function as a woman coming into a male-dominated world and be effective.
And how effective were you? How did that work out?
See that? Oops, there it is. That's my law on the books. Lobbied by me for 3 years, unanimously voted by the House and the Senate. So successful, baby.
That sounds pretty good. I give you a hand. Sue?
Yeah, I'm Sue Blythe, and I coordinate the campaign for environment. And when I first started working with We the World, I was thinking, well, these campaigns just feel so masculine somehow. And I wanted to bring a softer touch to this whole thing. My focus with the environment is just as much the social sciences as it is the climate science and all the environmental science. So what I've done with the help of some wonderful women is create the Gardens of Global Unity. We celebrate 11 days of global unity in September, from September 11th to the 21st, which is the International Day of Peace. And in 2019, the United Nations Secretary General named the International Day of Peace the theme for that day, Climate Action for Peace. And in that spirit, we founded a pilot project with the University of Florida to teach peaceful ways of protecting the environment. And hopefully by the year 2050 is the story we're telling, we're going to reverse global warming and we're gonna love it into being. And this is the, I see it as the balancing of the masculine and the feminine spirit, that we are coming into a time in our human history that we're learning how to live in closer harmony, not only with women and men and finding that equality and equity, but also with the environment and the natural world. And so bringing that sense of wholeness and oneness and interdependence into the climate story is part of my focus. And during Earth Month, which starts later this month on the equinox and going right through going from March 20th through Earth Day on April 22nd, we'll be working with some young people and some elders like me, and telling the story of how we are coming into harmony with nature and with each other. And so the themes that we're taking, we're doing a little show once a week that is youth and elders in a climate conversation. And we start out by saying we stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. And that's the opening words of the Earth Charter. And that's a document that was launched in the year 2000. And now it's 20 years later, and we're kind of documenting the ways that people are actually helping to create the sustainable future that we all want. And then in the subsequent weeks, we're talking about respect and care for the community of life, one. The second one is ecological integrity. The third is social and economic justice, bringing in this theme of equality in the workplace and in finances and all of that, and in decision making at all levels. This is where we are learning again to balance the masculine and feminine so that we can have a more peaceful society. And then that fourth theme of the Earth Charter is democracy, nonviolence, and peace. And so those are the main themes that we'll be working on. And the last one that we're doing right on Earth Day will be called The Way Forward. And in the Earth Charter, it says that there's a role, vital role, for every individual, family, organization, business, government, everybody has a vital role to play in creating this sustainable, just, and peaceful future. So I'm really thrilled to be working on these themes with young people and with the young people who are bringing the energy and the drive to make the change that we need. And then working with the elders who have been working on these issues for so many years and bring some wisdom and experience and especially the networks and the resources to this climate conversation. And it's really just a wonderful ride, and I invite you all to join me.
And where will people find these programs?
Okay, it's on the climatecollaboratory.org. And you can contact me, Sue Blythe, that's SUEBLYTHE, at we.net, we.net.
Wonderful. And welcome, Shannon. We're talking about this coming together of being a woman and health and our work in the world with prosperity. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself again and maybe weigh in from your perspective.
Thanks, Catherine. Before I start, Minagijagad in the way Maganuk, I just wanted to greet you all. Good day, my relatives in my language. My name is Shannon Crossbear. I'm located, in my sense of place is right here on my homelands on the shores of Lake Superior in northern Minnesota. I'm Ojibwe and Irish, and I follow my traditions. And I am acting as the coordinator for the Campaign for Interdependence for We the World. And I thank you. I'm really great to hear the conversation and to hear what people are saying about, you know, this intersect of women and work and their relationship and to health and what that means. And it's really hard. I guess I'm the right person for the interdependence because I can't think of anything that isn't interdependent. It's just the way my head works, right? The way my mind works. So when I think about the female, and I think about the Mother Earth, and I think about, you know, the Big Mama. That's what we call the Big Mama, and everything that happens kind of to the mother happens to us. So, you know, when we disrespect the mother, why would we not behave that way toward our other feminine energies? So a long time ago, guess it's been, geez, probably about 30, maybe more, 30 years ago, there was a group of us, males and females, that got together, and we were having this discussion about, kind of at the time, there was a lot of bashing going on, bashing of males, or, you know, back and forth. And we talked about that kind of the war between the sexes, and we were sitting around and said, Well, what would it look like if we had peace? Like, what would it look like if the war between the sexes was over? And so we ended up having a peace retreat, and it was really just to begin that conversation, right? And I think we said something like, it's a cold day in hell, you know? Anyway, we made it fun and we had this retreat, and it was really interesting because we had a male and female that was facilitating that was younger, that was in their 20s or early 30s. And then we had a male and female that were facilitating that were in their 40s and 50s. And then we had a male and a female that were in their 60s. And I thought it was a really nice balance, right? It was good for us as facilitators because we were in the process with the people that were participating. And it was really rich, and we learned a lot. We learned a lot, I think, during that time. So I was reflecting upon, you know, how when we move forward, some of the lessons that, you know, we kind of learned about how we honor all of that. We honor our feminine side. And I grew up in a different kind of a community where two things were happening simultaneously as a woman, right? As a woman, you were in huge, huge danger and still are today as a tribal woman. The murdered and missing Indigenous women in this country is shocking. And if you don't know about it, then I would encourage you to find out. Just this past month, there were over a half a dozen girls in South Dakota that have disappeared. So, and this is an ongoing thing. And these women are never looked for. They don't even open cases. And why they don't open cases is, yes, because they're not valued. And because of the way that our legal system works is that they are so busy fighting over who has jurisdiction if a crime has been committed, that nobody even looks for them. Because it's not a state issue, it's a federal issue. And federal will not intercede in those kinds of situations. So we have this going on, and it's been going on for a long time. And so that I just want to put it out there that as my sisters, we're in big trouble, and we need help. We need help because there's so few of us to elevate the voice. So we need our allies, we need our sisters and our brothers to come and help us with that message. I have been very blessed in my life, or maybe not, I don't know. I ended up having all boys. So that was a real interesting kind of dynamic, right? And I was thinking while we were having this conversation, I don't think I've ever worked in a, I've worked in predominantly female run and majority females in every work situation that I've been in. And so, you know, I worked for Ontario Native Women's Association. I worked for the Federation of Families for Children's Mental Health for years. I worked for an organization called Change Matrix that is a diverse group of women doing work. So I've always just had kind of this, you know, support, not that there weren't men involved, but actually there were more females. And, you know, this intersect of our health, again, reflects back to how are we treating ourselves as women? How are we treating each other? You know, this expectation that, you know, if years ago when I worked in the, I also did some work in the alternative or complementary medicines in adding to the knowledge of Western medicine. And I remember when we first had the conversations, you know, we would meet in the, you know, in the in the places that we would meet, like Unitarian churches, libraries, and a couple of basements that you could find, you know, because this is where these gatherings were. And there was always this conversation about not being taken seriously. And this wasn't psychic fair kind of stuff. This was actually people who were legitimate practitioners in alternative therapies. And there was always this question about, you know, being taken seriously. And yet we were waiting for permission to get out of the basement. And that's not the way it happens. You get yourself out of the basement. And you know, and other people come along. And I think as women, you know, we have such an important role to play in health, in the health of our environment, in the health of our planet, in the health of, because I'm telling you, who's raising these babies? It's still predominantly women raising these babies. So if we're going to be changing the consciousness of our future generations, then it's up to us, because we're the ones who are in that relationship to formulate the way of being, the way of thinking, the what the expectations are. And we need help for that. And I think sometimes, you know, I reflect back on how the wisdom of my you know, the people that I've known, the women in my life, and many are on the other side, you know, not on this earth walk anymore, but the things that they had to share about what it means to become a woman, how to take that seriously, like our coming of women, our coming of age ceremonies. Everybody should have a beautiful coming of age ceremony. A beautiful time to contemplate and reflect on what it means. And then the assignment of aunties and granny aunties and sisters that are going to help them on this life journey, right? Everybody should have, when they are carrying a child, everyone should have a welcoming in the womb ceremony where the people around them commit to keeping that woman safe while she brings new life in. And away from drugs and alcohol, away from negativity, away from, you know, with good nutrition, all that kind of stuff. What, how would that change the world? My friend, Dr. D. Bigfoot, Dolores Bigfoot, she, you know, she so simply states it, you know, when she thinks about even with our children, they go, she says, what are the four things that I can do for my child, right? Any parent can do, any caretaker can do, you know. I can greet my child by name every day. I can read or tell a story to my child every day. I can feed my child every day. And I can allow my child to hear me pray or beseech on my child's behalf every day. And just think about the powerful, how powerful that is. Four little things that we can do and how it would change the health of the world, right? So anyway, that's what I meant. I'm so glad to be here with you. I just love your beautiful faces. I'm like so excited to see all of you and to, you know, and to really hear what the power that we have is. What a great month. I'm so glad you're here too, Jason, to kind of, you know, be a witness to, you know, what does it mean to be in the world where we still are defining things, and your generation is challenging us to define what those terms mean, male, female, his, her, them, us. And you know, I'm so glad to be here on this earth walk when the conversation is happening. So thanks. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that was lovely. And I think that we really do want to think of this in an expansive way. And I've been inspired in different ways as I've been listening to all of you speak. And I can't help but feel a sense of longing for the kind of continuity you speak of, Shannon, because I come from a family that and from a community that has really struggled with those ancestral connections. Of course, I know my parents, I know my grandparents, I knew my great-grandparents, but the children in my family now don't have those connections, it seems. And a lot of the support systems of the culture have eroded. So when I was growing up, my grandfather, you know, started his life as a chauffeur, and he ended up working at Grumman Aircraft. But he had a thing where all the boys in the family had to learn a craft, a skill, something that was marketable. But the women were terribly neglected. It was assumed that they were going to be somebody's wife, and they wouldn't need to know anything that they couldn't figure out in the kitchen. And so I come from this very patriarchal family. And I think that as women, sometimes we really do have to rekindle within us that that self-reliance and enterprising spirit, and really encourage each other and young girls that they are capable. Now, this is probably a generational thing. I don't know that girls now have that particular issue, except that I think that very often girls just don't have access in some ways that that boys may have. I suspect that may be the case. And that also, I think, is very relative to class. So there's something very appealing to thinking about living in a tribal community, because that's how I remember my communities to be. But I don't see that anymore. Even without COVID, I don't see the same level of community support for people. And people really seem to be out there on their own to a great extent. So as we continue the conversation, maybe we could think of systems that we can build in that is not just for our betterment, but also to provide a pathway for young people who want to be wholesome, healthy, and supportive of their own lives and of each other. That may or may not be an issue, but I see it in my family. And so I was wondering, any other thoughts? Anyone want to jump in?
I have some thoughts, but I really want to see if you want to invite Jason into the conversation before. But I would just like to quick respond to you and Shannon, because as you speak, Catherine, I'm thinking of my own ancestors. And at this moment in time, in the age I am, I'm realizing that on my female lineage, there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of, I'm not being seen, just like you said, that the women were not valued for something other than providing sustenance for the family. And I wrote down two things that I'm experiencing today with your thought of being in a tribal, in a family oriented with multi-generations, and why maybe, and Jason, maybe you can speak to this more, maybe it's not as, I don't want to say valued, but it's not as prominent now as it was, Catherine, when we and Shannon, all of us when we were younger. Because I'm seeing two different things happening with people and women in particular. One is they're really having a difficult time figuring out who they are, where they fit, because old norms are starting to fall away. They're starting to be seen as wrong in the raising of women. And on the other hand, there is an awareness that there is a culture still wants us to remain a thing, you know, somebody who can be had on a shelf or on an arm or just a pretty face or a perfect body. And those two things, I don't recall being in our conversation when I was younger. There was more about what kind of character you were, who you were, what you might want to offer to the world. So I see those two things as fighting, which probably doesn't give way for us to recognize we would benefit from a multicultural family unit support around us.
Very good points. Jason, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I could jump in. So I was fortunate enough to be raised in a system or in different communities where it was predominantly women led. You know, I was involved with Taekwondo for 10 years, and my grandmaster was a woman. Most of my masters were women. So to see them at that kind of like, you know, upper level in, you know, it's, again, it's little kids learning martial arts, but you're still learning to respect how much time and dedication they put into their craft. I mean, I learned from a really young age, like I didn't see a difference between men and women. I saw everybody as a person. Everybody was equal. You got to prove yourself, right? Obviously, a lot of it has to do with respect, and the way that I carry myself is that if I meet somebody new, you immediately have my respect. It's only until you lose it is when things will change, where I look at you differently. In terms of the familial stuff, I didn't know my most of my grandparents. Really, the only grandparent I have contact with is my grandmother. And, you know, in our family, she's kind of like the person we look to in terms of like how we carry on the culture, how we, you know, interact during gatherings. And I'm pretty sure it would be a little bit different if both my grandfathers were in the picture, or even if one of them was. But the fact that she's in charge kind of made it seem normal to me that a woman should be in charge. And even in my own household, I mean, my mom literally does everything for us. I never have to question if, you know, I do something wrong and she's just gonna, you know, be disappointed or whatever. She always looked out for my best intentions, always try to put me in the best position. And the other part of it is that me and my sister, we have almost a 4-year age difference, but everything that I did, she did herself. We were always together. So it wasn't that we had less opportunity. It was more like we were always together. So it made it seem normal to me that, you know, why can't something that a boy does be something that a girl does and excels at? And obviously we're siblings, so we're always fighting, competing against each other. And that really helps me understand, like, it really enhances that feeling of you're not something less, you're my equal. Obviously, she's my sister, so she will be a little bit less than me because she's younger. But, you know, being in public school, it just always baffled me because most of the teachers, principals, they're women. Yet you have like a lot of boys, male teachers just disrespecting women over and over and over again. And I'm sitting there watching this, like, why does this happen? Why, like, is there something that was different in my life or something that was totally different in their lives? And it just, something doesn't add up. And I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, what you choose to respect, what you choose to believe. And that's something that I think needs to change in this culture. I mean, as you guys said before, like, my generation pretty much is trying to redefine how we see people, if that's gender, if that's race, economic status. And I never thought those labels should have existed. I mean, as a kid, everything's pretty simple. You know, I'm Jason and you're somebody else. Let's go play, let's go do whatever, right? Why does that change as we get older? If anything, it should become more simplistic, because you're gaining a better sense of yourself, which shouldn't mean that you're deterring or trying to you know, bash other people that are different from you. So that's kind of something that I've really noticed along my upbringing. And that's something that I really, you know, I hold myself accountable because I am part of the male population. And I need to make sure that I'm always doing my best to either support women or help them get to where they want to be. Because at the end of the day, like, we're all people. I don't really see a difference. Like, yeah, you might identify as male, female, transgender, whatever. I'm gonna see you as a person, and that it just keep it simple. I don't know why we have to make it so difficult sometimes.
Excellent, excellent. That was wonderful, Jason. So, yeah, that was really wonderful because I think that you really are giving us a space where we can all begin to come together in that conversation and bring that heart to the situation. And that's the lovely thing about generations that are coming up now. They haven't had the level of intractability and hard-headedness and craziness that some of us have who were came around in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. There is something wonderful, as you described, that does remind me of how I saw the world when I was younger. I found when I moved into the world, it was very, very confusing to me that people were so selfish and mean, and that they would be willing to undermine you and degrade you and just engage in crazy behavior because I presume it was the competition. But another thing I really had to deal with as I was moving through the world is how toxic women can be. That was a real shock to me to find that there were women in the workplace who simply had just adopted the same rules. It's not like they were more toxic than men. They just found that it was necessary to operate according to the same rules in the same system. But I had always imagined that there was some sisterhood that would override that. But I find that that wasn't the case. But I think it's important that as many of us as possible begin to interject that sisterhood into the work that we do and providing guidance and opportunities for both young men and young women, but to just have that openness. And one of the challenges for me in that, because that is kind of my nature, but I tend to be a little too maternal in the workplace. I found that I don't know how to separate that maternal, take care of people kind of attitude from not so much of being toxic, but really needing to get things done and really needing to meet schedules and really needing to do the work. So I haven't been able really to find that balance. So I'm wondering if any of you have some insights on finding that balance between efficiency, but still holding that soft center.
Jason reminded me, and you brought, when you talked about the prosperity issue in relation to women that I think does tie into this maternal thing, is that we live in a society that doesn't value that women tend to be the caretakers, you know, in their group or their family. And that is unpaid work that we are always, you know, sort of, we take that economic hit. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that when we are in the workplace, it's important to remember that, like, that unless you're being paid to be like, I don't know, the den mother or something, that's not the value that you want to focus on bringing, because that also brings a level of expectation in terms of, you know, reciprocity in the relationship that doesn't always work in the workplace. The way I deal with it is I want to connect, like to care about the people that I'm working with. I don't work with people I find it difficult to care about. I don't know that that's necessarily an answer, but to look at like trying to understand, not as a mother, but more just as a community member, to be able to look at the people on your team and help them develop more of an awareness about what it is they want to get out of whatever it is that you're working on together, and be supportive of that, like in terms of empowering them to, you know, take more opportunities to do that, whatever that is, to get more of whatever it is that they're looking to get from it. And to kind of cultivate hidden leaders, like people who are quiet, or, do you know what I mean? Like to be able to do it that way, as opposed to caretaking in the way, like protectively, the way a mother does, to look at channeling that sense, that maternal sensitivity towards empowering people, to figure out what their place is, what it is that they want to do as part of the team, and empowering them and giving them understanding where they're lost, that you give them enough guidance so that they can feel empowered. Yeah, so that would be sort of like my, that's what I've learned. That's what I'm working on.
That's great. And I just wanted to say we're running close to the end of the hour. So everyone, please give your contact if you want to, your websites, so people can follow up on your work and connect with what you're doing also as we move to our final comments. So Yvette, did you want to give out a contact?
Oh, I don't remember. Empoweredinnovation.org is probably the easiest one. Or you can find me by my name on like Twitter or Instagram or what have you. Reach out.
Empoweredinnovation.org?
Yes, empoweredinnovation.org.
Okay, Sharon?
Sharon at njjl.world.
Okay, did you have some thoughts you wanted to add to this conversation before we do?
I really like what everybody's saying. I'm so grateful. And I want to start off by appreciating you, Catherine, for extending the invitation for us to create this container of support for each other, whatever that looks like, including you, Jason. You are part of our tribe now. And I like the point that Yvette makes in answer to your question, Catherine, about how do you help that mothering, nurturing side exist in business. And what I always say is, you know, the airline's got it right. Do it to yourself first. You know, take care and mother yourself. Honor yourself. How do you feel? Not to the exclusion of everyone, but to the beginning. Because when we know how to honor ourselves, then we can figure out more clearly what everybody else needs, instead of stepping in and filling a hole that is not for us to fill. So I found that that is a valuable tool for moms and families and women in the office. But thank you so much for this conversation.
You're welcome. Anyone else want to jump in with some last thoughts?
I'll give a last thought. First of all, Jason, I just wanted to say thanks. My sister is a grandmaster in Taekwondo. And so maybe we should connect at some point in time, because, you know, I totally get it, even though she says I look like a broken wringer wash machine when I try to do Taekwondo. But, yeah, so everybody else says, if you mess with me, I'll get you. My brother's not me. I say, if you mess with me, I got a sister, you know. The thing that I thought about, Catherine, is when you were talking, is of course you're nurturing at work. And why shouldn't you be? Who is giving us the rules that we can't be nurturers at work? You know, if that is our inclination, if that is our nature, if that is what brings us joy, then we should be doing it. And we should value it, Yvette, and we should monitorize it if that's what we need to do to support people. You know, there is a position, whether it be advisor, coach, whatever, however, and they should be supported. Our wise people should be supported. You know, when I think about those kind of, like, what could we learn from, you know, different ways of doing things. You know, there was a position, I mean, always our elders were always taken care of. They always had, you know, I guess too, it depends on what you mean by prosperity, but they were always made sure they had their food and their clothing and some of their wood for warmth. They had, I mean, everything that they needed was taken care of so that they didn't have to worry about that, so that they could be free to give of themselves in the way that is necessary. And every one of our work environments needs that. So, and I was also thinking, Catherine, just participating in reflective practice, right? For you, as Sharon said, you know, you get to be among the people you get to take care of. So anyway, I'm just glad to be with you and glad that we're talking about what does it take for us collectively to learn how to be healthy and to support each other. So thanks.
Excellent.
Thanks sister Sue. And brother.
Yeah, I'm feeling like, you know, if we ground our conversation in the theme of health, that peace is the ultimate health, right? And so in the Earth Charter, it says we recognize that peace, and I see that as wholeness and well-being, recognize that peace is the wholeness, there it is, of creating right relationships with oneself. So how am I a healthy person and have healthy relationships with other people, other cultures, other life, earth, and the larger whole of which all are a part. And I think it's so important to have this conversation with young people and to help and nurture and grow a new civilization where we respect each other and care for each other and live a healthy, happy life.
Beautiful. And I just wanted to remind all of our listeners and viewers that they can find more at wetheworld@we.net and connect to all of our campaigns. And for those who want to connect with myself, my website is heartofmindradio.com and my email is heartofmindradio@gmail.com. So we are out of time. And I just want to say thank you to all of you. And yes, I think that this is, like Sue says, a collaboratory of a different kind, so that we can work together as we go forward, supporting each other in life, in our campaigns, and in our efforts to be prosperous in our calling, whatever that might be. I would like to see everyone on this screen healthy and prosperous and contributing to the world. So thank you all.